Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Wishers Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans. Go to patreon.com today to support the show, get access to our Discord and BSBOT and more. Quick announcement before the show, Greg won't be making this or maybe next week's episode. He's got some stuff to take care of. We've been doing the show every single week for 7 years. My man's got to take care of some things. So without further ado, let's get some things out of the way. The show is not ending. We're totally fine. It's all cool. Greg's just got to take care of some shit. So I've had my friend Dan come in and talk to me about the Rangers for 50 minutes. I mean, not that hard to do, to be honest, because, I mean, there's a lot to talk about. Keandre Miller, a lot of good vibes with this Ranger team right now, and a lot to break down in terms of what's going to happen in the future. So my friend Dan comes on. Next week, we're going to have Fitz come back on the show as well, and it should be overall a good time. It's going to be a little bit different than usual, of course. No Greg here to do a five-minute rant, talk about the Mets. I'll try and prompt Dan and that from there. So stick with me for the next week or two. Greg will be back, and then we'll go from there. All right, without further ado, here's Mark Messier.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Hey, Blue Shirt Breakaway fans, welcome. That'll be the Blue Shirts Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead, and this week I will not be hosting with my dear co-host Greg Kaplan. I will be hosting with my dear friend Dan. Daniel, say hello. Have I ever called you Daniel? Ever once?
This is the first time, but first time for everything. As I fill in for Greg, I have to say, this podcast is mostly going to be a deep dive into Correa's ankle. So I want to get that out.
So 6 years is good for the ankle, and I think 13 would have been the deterioration point, which is why they went 6 years with the Twins. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's still a decent offseason for the Mets. You got to trust Cohen and his top level guys because he's not afraid to spend money, so that's not what scared him off. So I have faith that they realized the long term wasn't good for the team, and
it's all Jacob deGrom's fault, and that's why this podcast is about the New York Rangers. Everybody,
the other thing we could do. Hey, Greg's not here. All we're talking about is uniforms and jerseys who's captain.
Fuck yes. Okay, let's get right to it. Truba, I mean, it should be Kreider. And second of all,
yeah, and obviously it should be Kreider. And the new Liberties are
they're cursed.
They're 1-6 now.
It's 1-6. That is correct.
Ugh.
Disgustingly bad.
Yeah.
Listen, Rick Carpinello on Twitter, former beat writer for The Athletic, the man doesn't hold back. Tonight he tweeted, I think they should replace Lafreniere in power play one with Ben Harper. So he has some pretty interesting takes, but one of them being burn those jerseys. And I agree with him. Yeah. That's the one where I'm like, yeah, listen, I think they're good. I have a Lieber Hayek reverse retro. I don't know why. By the way, props to Molly Walker from the New York Post for writing a what Lieber Hayek has to do to stay mentally fit during this time when he can't play article today. Because, I guess that's where we are.
I will note that your Lieber Hayek jersey was displayed on the MSG Jumbotron on Thursday in the 2-1 overtime win against the Stars.
Thank you. I mean, that was the whole purpose of getting it. It's like, I would like to put Lieber. See, I said this on OT on Thursday with Greg, but really, Keandre Miller fucked over my get Lieber to the All-Star game situation because Keandre Miller is so cool and actually good, and Ben Harper is playing over Lieber Hayek. But if Lieber Hayek was playing, I swear we would have got him there.
Yeah, like in a John Scott, like grassroots kind of let's make this happen, even though it's not deserving kind of way. Of course.
Yes, it's not deserved at all. Although, but it would have been hilarious.
And nothing against Key, but isn't he like way ahead of Fox in the voting too?
Yeah. Well, so. Keandre, well, isn't Fox like a lock to go, or is it just Panarin and Mika that are going? Or it might just be Mika was the selected person. Igor, there it is.
Igor is the locked-in Rangers representative. You would think Fox, who should be a Norris finalist, should
literal
be going.
God, yes.
But honestly, if he gets a few days off as a Rangers fan, I'm not going to be too sad about it.
Isn't that what the All-Star break? Wouldn't you be pissed If you were just like selected to the all-star team, you're like, wow, I could have 5 days off with my family, or I could go play this stupid exhibition game.
I feel like the young guys, especially the first time, like you are so excited, or that journeyman who somehow like gets there, has a Jonathan Chichu year and all of a sudden is going to the all-star game. You are so excited.
And Panarin couldn't give a shit less.
And then there's those guys that when they decide which games in the all-star game they're playing, they pick the ones that would let them leave the earliest if their team loses.
Yeah, and I don't blame them at all. Like, it's totally over for them. Like, Panarin doesn't want to go. Like, it'll be cool for Miller. I'm sure he'll be pumped to go. I don't even know if Fox cares at this point. Like, we always talk about, quote-unquote, the kids on the New York Rangers, and somehow Fox is never in that the kids section, but he's a child still, which is unbelievable.
So the one thing is he's got a couple years, versus the quote-unquote kids, because he – went to college and did his little holdout thing. Sure. But he's not much older. He's not a grizzled vet.
No. What is he? It's his fourth season. What is he? 25, 24? I just Googled Adam, the word Adam, like Adam Fox would come up. Like, what an idiot I am. He's 24 years old. Yeah. He's a child. He's a fucking, he's a fucking baby. Let's get to some of the game action over the past three games. Since we last spoke, they played the Dallas Stars. You and I were so lucky to attend that game, of which the Rangers were shut out 59 minutes and 59 seconds until Keandre Miller found a way to score. And by the way, credit to the crowd in the Garden last Thursday, because even in the anthem, the crowd was hot. Like, you know, like in WWE wrestling, they talk about there's a lot of heat in the crowd. Like, oh, this is a good crowd. The crowd's hot. That crowd was hot from the start.
Both said to each other at different points in the game, this might be the best crowd we've sat for a regular season game that was, I don't want to say meaningless, but like it wasn't like
Dallas Stars, dude. Thursday.
It wasn't a rivalry game. It was there were some Stars fans there. You could hear during the anthem they shout out Stars every time the word comes up in the song we're all indoctrinated to sing. And they – there was like, oh, I didn't even see that many green jerseys, but you just hear them. And so I was like, oh, are there really that many Stars fans there? But overall, the crowd was pretty into it for most of the game. And then obviously when we scored each of the two goals, insane pandemonium.
Oh, it was, I mean, I can't remember a time in the Garden like that I've had personally. So when Keandre scores that, well, let's talk about the rest of the game, because there's only two things that are really important about that game. Sammy Blais literally murders Julian Gauthier.
Oh, best hit of the year.
Yeah, best hit of the year. Maybe the most impact he's had on the ice, and it was to Julian Gauthier's chin. You and I saw it up close and personal. Julian Gauthier was knocked out cold. I think he was really wobbly when he kind of got up. My best guess is that he has a concussion, and he's on the IR now as of yesterday. As of 2 days ago of this recording on Tuesday morning release. So I don't think we'll be seeing Julian Gauthier for a while. And outside of that, I can't – like, the Rangers went 0-4 on the power play. That's, like, everything you need to know before 59 minutes and 59 seconds. That's what happened in the Dallas Stars game.
Mm-hmm. And they got caught on one bad change that led to the Stars goal. Gaudreau was coming off, Mika was going on, there was some confusion. Who are you playing the puck?
Oh,
and it just led to a wide open streaking down the middle, and
I think it was Seguin, right?
Yeah, they didn't give Igor much of a chance there.
No, not at all. So the Rangers fight it off. Keandre Miller somehow finds a way to find the back of the net. Fucking pandemonium in the Garden. Absolutely crazy. And then Adam Fox does one of the most Adam Fox goals I've ever seen after. By the way, and I know Vince has said this as well, Mika Zibanejad has been unbelievable. It's funny because you and I are, I'm not a chart guy, but I do respect the charts. Hashtag respect the charts.
Right.
Where they tell me like things that I really can't see. And some things that they talk about Mika Zibanejad of recent is like his defense really isn't there. And I just, from eye test perspective, I don't really agree with the charts. Mika's had a ton of insane takeaways recently and stick lifts and all these plays where he's really making turnover plays or an offense creating sustained offense in the zone. For example, that overtime play where the Rangers win. Panarin makes a great move, beats three guys, goes around, gets a shot on net, save from Dallas. Great. Otter's awesome. Mika Zibanejad finds a way to take the puck off the guy in front of the net. gets it back to Panarin. Panarin feeds Fox, game over, when he goes backhand. And absolutely ridiculous. But that all happens because Mika Zibanejad has been, you know, found a way to fight through it. He's been a kind of gritty player, which is something you really don't think about when you think about Mika.
No, and with that play, Fox is going to get the accolades for the great deke and backhand
was delicious.
Especially, you know, as it's been pointed out many times, for a defenseman to have a backhand like that down low, you know, perfectly placed. I mean, what a goal. But, you know, you brought up the two plays that preceded it, which was Panarin. Panarin takes an pass that looks like it's going to be a turnover, and he pinches and squeezes into the boards to get possession, goes in and gets the shot off. If he doesn't do that, this whole play never starts. I think it was a Schneider pass because he was stuck on the ice from the beginning and of the OT period.
We didn't even mention they started Lafreniere, Hedel, and Schneider.
Yeah, which was surprised. But I, as I said to you at the time, I was like, I think they just had to pick three guys that weren't on the ice for the six man last part of the game when they were trying to get that tying goal.
They needed to catch their breath for just a minute. Yeah. And I know Lafreniere, who we're going to get into pretty deeply late as this podcast goes. For those don't know, that I sometimes call Dan on 3-hour car rides, and we talk the entire time about, like, just prospects.
Yeah.
We're just so fucking nerdy. So we'll get right into Lafreniere at that point in time. But, yeah, Mika's just underheralded. And it happened again tonight at the end of the game. Ryan Lindgren's going to get the accolades, like you said, similar to Fox, where he just throws his body in front of pucks and goes to the locker room early in the game and comes back. But again, Mika Zibanejad lifted three sticks in a row as the Rangers were fighting off the Columbus Blue Jackets. When I see these charts that say, you know, Mika Zibanejad is not really a two-way center, I go, I don't know. I watch a lot of Mika Zibanejad, and he makes a lot of goddamn good plays all the time.
You know, I just as you are, I'm not a chart guy, but I am a respecter of the charts. And
hashtag respect the charts, yes.
And so, look, if you're going into certain shot differentials or high danger chances, but like, and I hate, you know, just devolving into this, but like the eye test is like, yeah, when he's out there, he's making defensive plays like that. Joe mentioned it, how Mika came through with a couple.
We're going to talk about Joe mentioning things as well.
You know, also, that whole third period looked like it was coached by John Tortorella. Right. There was just so much turtling and just hanging on with that lead.
They wanted to go home bad. They played a game versus Montreal, which we can summarize in about 20 seconds. They had every chance to win that game. They didn't. And sometimes that's the NHL. It's like Keandre, who has been awesome for the last 3 weeks, had two plays where he looked overly tired, mishandled the puck, and then mishandled the puck on the offensive zone as well. And on the defensive side, it led to a goal. And honestly, other than that, they had a chance to, if that game was maybe 5 seconds longer, they probably tie it up and win in overtime. But for the most part, I thought they played well versus Montreal, even though Montreal is a bad team.
Yeah, it's one of those tough things where you're playing a team at the bottom of the standings, you're coming off 2 days rest, and you're starting Igor, and you're only giving him one goal. It's tough. And, you know, Keandre has been playing so well. I wasn't able to watch the game live. I was, unfortunately not somewhere with TV or reception. And
brag about it.
Yeah. And,
you were skiing.
I was in prison. And the you just look at the condensed highlights, it's Keandre's worst game ever, right? The power play goal, he takes, it's a 3-on-2. He locks up one man, leaves another wide open, and Kirby Doc winds up putting it in the back of the net. And then the other goal is, like you said, he has the turnover both in the offensive zone and in the defensive zone, the same play that leaves, was it Caulfield on the doorstep?
Yeah, and Caulfield's their top goal scorer for the Montreal Canadiens, and he's quite good.
Yeah, but from what I was able to read, Keandre didn't have an overall horrific game. It was just, you know, those unfortunately two plays. He's right in center of those, and you know, sometimes you're going to have nights like that where you don't play terrible, but those two plays are going to stick out. Obviously, if the Rangers score three goals that game, you're not talking about a rough Keandre game. You're just talking about, okay, you got your 2 points versus Montreal and you move on. But, like you said, so it stinks to lose a game to a bottom dwelling team, but
whatever. They've lost to the Ducks. They've lost to so many bad teams. They lost to the Blackhawks in the most pathetic loss of the season. I'm not really worried about this team losing against the Montreal Canadian team, especially, by the way, when Glant came out and said forthright that the team was dealing with the flu. They were all sick. You know, Panarin, Lindgren, and I forget who else didn't practice. I don't know if it was Schneider or not, but multiple players didn't practice due to like sickness, and I'm sure just being totally dehydrated from the flu and not wanting to play, but everyone played through it.
Yeah.
And then to play on a back-to-back after that flu and win like this is very impressive.
Yeah. And you know, look, in an 82 game season, you're just going to have some off nights, and it's unfortunate.
You're going to lose to the Canadians sometimes, dude. Like,
yeah, it's
they're 14-2, it's like 3-2 or something.
Yeah, and you know what? I think the narrative, if Keandre's shot in the Dallas game is 1 second later, I think it's a very different narrative of you got shut out versus Dallas and then you only scored one against Montreal. But luckily, you know, we wanted to having the miracle to win that game, so you can chalk it up as look, it sucks, right? It's a game you should have won, you didn't, but. Like you said, they regrouped today, and the first two periods were absolutely dominant.
It was like, was it 25 shots to 5 through 2?
I think even more daunting was the shot attempts was, I think I saw
52 to 18.
Yeah, was it Colin who tweeted that out? It was something absurd, and you know, the slight credit to the Blue Jackets, who seemed to be blocking a lot of the shots, but when the ice is so tilted like that, it's one of those games where I was happy when they got the third goal because it felt like, please don't let this team stick around. When they let up the first goal, it was like, this game's not quite over, even though you've been dominating it. Let's, you know, finishing out. And then you got your turtling. But hey, they held on, got the 2 points, much needed after losing to Montreal.
For sure. And that kind of brings us to what the storyline would have been if they would have lost to Dallas, which is still a prominent storyline, and that is the power play. Yeah. And the power play right now, and you've heard Greg and I talk about this on the show, how we believe that Glant is a very spiteful man. He just truly has shown a lot of different verticals as to why he's spiteful. And one of the most spiteful things I think he's doing right now is doing the right thing, which is giving Lafreniere top time with Mika Zibanejad and Kaapo Kakko, but also giving Lafreniere top time in the power play, which, to his credit, is something we've called for many years, not many years now, but to give one of the kids a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. He chose the wrong kid. And Kaapo Kakko has been very, very good in the last couple of games, even though I know he had a five-game point. No score point streak, rather. And tonight he had 2 assists, which he looked very good on. I mean, the pass to Mika Zibanejad was phenomenal. But he's the best right winger on the team and likely the best left-handed shot on the team right now. Well, Lafreniere has been struggling. He can't buy a goal. The confidence you see with Lafreniere right now when you're watching him play is non-existent. He can't turn up ice. The passing isn't there. You could see him trying to force his way to the net, try to force his way into scoring a goal. I mean, even at the end of the game tonight versus CBJ, there was an empty netter attempt where he was blocked and he just looked miserable. And he's not really at, like, Chris Kreider will be back soon. I think if it's not on Thursday, which I kind of expect Chris Kreider back on Thursday, but if it's not on Thursday, it's the game after. And his spot, he will take his rightful spot back on that top line, which has been by far the best Rangers line all season with Kakko, Zibanejad, and Kreider. But Lafreniere has had this time to make an impact. And I think instead of making an impact, he's actually lowered not only my opinion, but I think the general, like, I can't tell you how many laugh is a bust responses I get now. And I don't think he's a bust, and I think that's being unfair, especially because I watched Kaapo Kakko the past couple years, and now he's turning into the player I really thought he could be, and the points are coming for Kakko, and there's more points to come. But Lafreniere has, I mean, the one thing that really worries me about him is that the flashes just aren't there, and the confidence just isn't there. And I think part of that is because he knows if he makes a mistake, it's over for him, but Gallant's kind of given him a little runway here, and he hasn't taken it. He's like, we've always talked about Lafreniere forcing his way off the third line and showing his way into the top six and forcing his way with that play. But dude, I mean, 0 for 4 on that power play in versus Dallas. The power play looked pretty rough even tonight at some points. And he took a penalty on it to make it 4-4. And that, of course, leads to the Mika Zibanejad goal. But I'm not calling Lafreniere a bust, but there are some things where it's like, hey, man, this is the chance you had to take control of this situation. And you've made really nothing of it. And that's kind of on you.
I have a lot of Laf thoughts. And for, you know this, but for the listeners, I'm a pretty big Laf stan. I have a Laf jersey. I hurt my Achilles jumping for joy when they won the lottery for him. So I've been like all in on Lafreniere becoming, you know, a star for the Rangers. And it's tough to watch right now. You know, for a while, like you said, we were like, well, he's going to play his way off the third line. He's going to give them no choice but to be a top six guy, even if it's crowded with Kreider and Panarin there. They'll have to move someone to the right or they'll have to bump someone else down. Then the narrative became, well, what do you expect? You're not giving him the chance. And early on this year, there were times when Laf was playing with Kreider and Zibanejad, and he was looking good. There was also that game where the Gallant seemingly out of spite put Kako, Lafreniere, and Zibanejad on a line, and they looked excellent. And you know,
it was out of spite.
You and I joked about, hey, you ever think just maybe Mika Zibanejad is the best center on this team, and he's gonna bump anyone up because Kako looks better playing with Zibanejad, Lafreniere looks better playing with Zibanejad. Like you see a trend here. And so it was like, oh, well, if Laf gets his time with Mika and another competent winger, you know, he's going to start showing out. And he's had a couple games to do that. And, you know, it's hard to say, like, look, if you don't produce in you know, a couple games, then the hell with you. But basically his clock is just as much as it takes Kreider to recover, right? Because as soon as Kreider's back, he's coming back, and Laf's getting bumped down to the third line at best. At worst, we've seen him scratched. But like you said, even last year, there were times when you're like, oh, I see the flashes. And the easiest one to pick out is that Detroit game where he has two goals, including
the Detroit goal is the defining moment of Lafreniere's career, and that's sad.
And there's been other times where, you know, he's kind of put in pucks around the net where he's just kind of had the nose for being in the right place. There haven't been too many highlight reel goals. There have been a bunch of cross ice passes, which I think is one of the few things I've seen him kind of excel at, is kind of threading a pass and having that vision. But I haven't seen many flashes this year, and it's become where I'm watching him on the ice every shift being like, well, what is he doing? And sometimes it's almost like he's being coached in a way that is like, well, if I don't have a talented player, what would I tell him to do? It's like, okay, just stand in front of the net. And this is even at 5-on-5, where he's not the net presence on the power play, where get deep in front of the net, you know, put pucks in, cycle. And they're basically, it looks like they're trying to take his creativity away. And, you know, there's probably a combination of his confidence being so shot that he's not willing to take those risks, as well as, you know, Gallant telling him, you know, you just got to play smart hockey and do the smart thing. And I don't think that's how you get a player like that to flourish, because if you look at his highlights in juniors, everything is him creating and setting up plays, coming on the half boards and making cross ice passes or coming in on transition. And you're not seeing that anymore, mostly because he's been told to, you know, stand in the blue paint and just cycle, which you and I also talked about this. When Kaapo Kakko has the puck against the boards and someone comes on him, you almost are happy because you know he's going to come out with it, and then he'll have that, you know, split second to find someone with a pass. Every time someone puts a body on Lafreniere, I'm expecting him to lose the puck, and it sucks because that's not the player you thought you were getting. But he also doesn't have the skating of like a Jack Hughes, who doesn't have to be that strong on the puck because he'll skate away from you. And so that, you know, not having the skating and not having the ability to win board battles is a tough combination.
It's really tough. And one of the things that I've noticed, especially tonight, and I think Kravtsov gets a lot of, I don't want to say unwarranted hate, because he does get injured a lot. And I don't think he was benched in that Montreal game when he took a puck off his leg. He just got hurt and got bruised. And tried to play through it, and I think the coach saw he was hurt, so they put him down. But tonight, when he scores that goal after the Hedl feed, it's like, okay, I've seen a lot of Kravtsov this season, and his defensive metrics and some of his defensive play is pretty good, better than Lafreniere's. And there are also times where Kravtsov shows flashes of skill, like where he's like, okay, I'll take the puck for myself, and I'll get the puck deep. You saw it tonight with a high cycle when he was going and just creating and trying to dump the puck deep and go find it and get it himself. But there are also times where he tries to deep pass players, or he's like, okay, I can show my skill, go through the legs here and just try and beat him with my pure ability. And Lafreniere just doesn't do any of that. So it's very strange where I'm not seeing even just like the what's supposed to be the highlight real stuff from Lafreniere on a daily basis. And I wonder if that's just because they're like, hey, go out there and be a grinder. And they've just changed his game entirely, but partially I don't want to say it's a 50-50 blame, because it's not a 50-50 blame. The blame's going to go one way or the other, but Lafreniere plays a part in this. And he has not taken a chance or a position to really grab hold of this in any way. And you cannot convince me, Dan, at all that Gallant is sitting here right now at 10:10 on a Monday night saying, my best option when Chris Kreider is out is Lafreniere. Yeah, you can't. He's seen Hedl and he's seen Kako, who are having... Hedl has a point in the last 7 games. Hedl's been awesome. He's amazing. And I want to get to him in just a second as well, because I think he should be on the second line. But you can't tell me right now that he wouldn't have Kako on that top power play. And this isn't just him being like, look, everybody, I tried. It didn't work out. Let's move on.
Yeah, and I think the reluctance to move Hedl up is probably just, you know, he has his top three centers and he wants to keep his top three centers. With Kako, you and I, the second Kreider went out and we read the beat reporter saying Lafreniere is going to get that chance, we were scratching our heads. Not because we don't think Lafreniere is skilled. If anything, Lafreniere's skill set probably lends itself to a power play when he has more time to look at the ice and more time to operate. But not in front of the net. That's never been his game. Whereas Kaapo Kakko has shown that he can bang bodies and create there. And yes, the one thing I will say is Lafreniere has shown very good hand-eye coordination and tipping pucks. But even if you look closely during the power plays, he's kind of standing with his stick in the way, just being like, all right, I'll tip it. Whereas, you know, Kreider is getting his whole body. He's screening the goalie.
Kreider's the best net front presence in the league. And I think somehow he's underrated as well
right
now.
You know, it's look what's happened to the power play with him out. And, you know, it's not exclusively that, right? The opponents are doing a good job of, you know, after a full
limiting the Mika Zibanejad.
After a full season of seeing Mika, you know, score those one timers, they're like, hey, maybe we should shade this way. And to their credit, they've done that. And we've been slow to adapt. Panarin has been a more willing shooter in the past couple of weeks because of that.
Well, Joe Micheletti will tell you that he missed the next six times tonight. He's very happy to tell you.
but you know, also, you know, Panarin's scored the lone goal yesterday, and that was, it wasn't a power play, but it was a delayed penalty. So a 6-on-5. And I think you need that second shooter. It's kind of maddening that we can't have a left-handed trigger man to be able to, you know, shoot one timers on the other side. I think Fox is doing a better job of creating some alternative shots. You know, like I said, slow to adapt. I will say Laf had a few nice passes on the power play tonight when he was at the side of the goal and he was doing like almost like a tic-tac-toe pass or a quick bump and he found someone in the slot. But again, that's not, you know, the same.
It's not his game.
It's not the same as standing in front of the net and just like hoping, you know, you can get your stick on a puck.
No one's asking him to be Chris Kreider. I want to make this super clear. What Chris Kreider does, no one else in the league can do. Yeah. It's very few people.
And this is the biggest question for that's come to my mind is that when Kreider was in there and Laffin and Kako and they were all on the second power play unit, it wasn't Laff that started at the net front. He was on the half wall and it was Kako in front of the net. So it's like, why are you all of a sudden saying like, well, Kreider's out, since you're taking his spot on the first line, you'll take his spot on the power play. It just doesn't make sense to me.
No, Kako should be there. It's ridiculous. Kako should be the net front presence. It's what he does. He's one of his best skills is puck handling in small spaces. And that, like, I know he hasn't really had like that tip-in game added to his game yet, but it's one of the things he does extremely well, and it's shocking that he's not there.
Yeah, and I also wouldn't mind getting Hedl some time in the Trocheck spot, but that's a whole nother conversation.
Well, actually, we're going to get to that conversation. So let's take a quick break, and we will come right back, and I want to talk about Trocheck. Transition. The NFL playoff action continues, and we're one step closer to Super Bowl 57. And for the NFL divisional round, check out DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Plus, all new and existing customers can take a shot at an even bigger payout with DraftKings stepped-up same-game parlays, similar to the same-game parlays we do. You know, you've seen them. Breakaway takeaway parlays. Boost your NFL winnings with each leg you add up to 100%. Woo! I mean, take the over on Eagles-Giants. Take the Giants versus the Eagles. So much fun this weekend to get in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the code BLUESHIRTS. BLUESHIRTS. New customers can bet up to $5 on the NFL divisional round and get 200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code BLUESHIRTS. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Let's get back to the show.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. Okay, well, we were talking about Trocheck and Hedl. And boy, I think, what was your instant reaction when Trocheck was signed for the New York Rangers? Because you know how we feel. It was the Rangers need a 1 or 2 year center, and they cannot afford to sign something long or big to the cap because there's just no way they can do it. They go to sign Vincent Trocheck, who I am a fan of, similar to as I'm a fan of Barclay Goodrow. I will mention him many more times in this podcast, just like Joe Micheletti does. But I'm still sort of shocked they signed him for 7 years. So where were you?
I didn't see it coming, right? The thought was either, A, they were going to sign Strom or Kopp to as much as they could give them without going over the cap, or they were going to sign a bargain bin guy. I know Greg was hard on the Paul Stastny train, and you know, accumulate that cap space and then also not have a contract tie you down for years and years. So then all of a sudden it was, well, the Rangers had interest in Trocheck. I was intrigued, but then you hear the contract he got, and it was like, well, it's going to be for 7 years. And I was like, well, okay, at least that means the number is going to be reasonable. And then I saw the number. I was like, oh, that's the 7 year number. Oof. It was one of those things where this better work almost immediately. Otherwise this is going to look like a pretty rough contract.
Yeah, and I one of my hot takes I've been saying in our insiders chat is I think Trocheck becomes next year's Trouba, where it's like I just takes a lot of shit for no reason. Sometimes Trouba takes a lot of shit for good reasons, but the contract is going to make what people dislike Trocheck eventually. I think, because right now it's still like new shine, new car, awesome addition. And I totally get why Chris Drury made the signing. Like, he's going for it now. He knows he has a 3 year window with Adam Fox in his prime, Igor Shesterkin in his prime, and before Mika and Panarin get too old, that he needs to go for it now.
Yeah,
dude, to me, totally makes sense.
You won two games in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, and it would be hard for any GM to say, okay, now is the time to take a step back.
So, yeah, it makes sense for me. The 7 years is really hard. It's really rough. We don't know where the team's going to be 7 years from now. Of course, I'm not really worried about it. I'd like to make sure that this team just goes as far as it can the next 3 years, because when Panarin and Mika, and Panarin's already on the downcline comparatively to his last couple of years, and I think Mika's still playing at an elite level, when the real decline comes, that's when this team is not going to go the way you'd want, because your best right winger right now is Kaapo Kakko, and there's just absolutely no one behind him.
Yeah, throw Kreider in that group, and you know there was a thought that once they start to decline, they're going to be the supporting guys for your new batch of stars, which is going to be Fox, Kakko, Lafreniere, and as much as we.
Keandre Miller, by the way.
No one saw that coming, right? Before.
That's so true. Well, I knew he was going to be good, but I didn't know he was going to have this offense.
Yeah, he's been a pleasant surprise, to say the least. But you and I talked about when they were doing this rebuild that, once they signed Panarin, you kind of started a clock. And they've somewhat lucked into having another, what you hope is generational goalie. And
lucked into having a generational defense.
Well, that luck, or he forced his way here.
That's lucky.
I guess
That's lucky, man.
So you already have these building blocks that it's like, okay, well, now's the time. And speaking of luck, getting a first and a second overall pick in the lotteries, if they were developing like a lot of the other first and second overall picks were, and I get this is the high end, but if Lafreniere is a Hughes or a Matthews and Kakko's an Eichel, and again, I know that's not a realistic expectation for every draft, but like think about what that team is right now.
If that's the case, we're cup favorites.
Easily. They haven't developed that way. And so, the thing you have to maneuver now is that instead of giving those guys those $7-8 million deals that you thought you were going to give them on their second contracts, you have Kakko on a bridge, and it seems like Laf's playing his way into a similar, if not lower, bridge than that.
I think Lafreniere signs for like 2 years, 2.1.
I mean, if you're him, you don't sign anything longer. You have to, give yourself a chance to, up your value, and with his pedigree of being the first overall pick, no matter how, even if he plays like this for another 2 years, he's going to get another shot because of what he did in juniors and his pedigree. So there's no risk of needing to take a 5-6 year deal at below what he thinks is his market.
I think Kakko would take a 6-year deal, something like that. But I think it would have to be like in the $6 million mm-hmm. range if they just couldn't afford it.
Yeah. I mean, the contract that was signed today was it today?
The Matthew
Boldy?
He got
Boldy. 7 for 7.
Yep.
And, that's.
It's going to look really good in 3 years, by the way.
I mean, look how good Jack Hughes' contract looks already, but. Going back to the original point of, when you're signing Trocheck, it's like, just worry about the next 3 years. And the only way to get Trocheck at that cap hit, which I still don't even think is that reasonable, is 7 years. Like, screw it. We're in this for 3 to 4 years, and who cares what the last 3 years of this deal looks like, which is also probably what they said when they signed Barclay Goodrow. But you're right in the sense that they're going to hate Trocheck's contract, because if Trocheck had Goodrow's contract, we're probably like, oh, what a good value signing. And if Goodrow had
if Trocheck had Goodrow's contract, I'd be like, wow, what a goddamn
and if,
steal.
Goodrow had Brozinski's contract, you're like, wow, that's the guy every team needs. Instead, I asked you when we were at the game, this is my own 5-star question. If the Rangers got one amnesty right now, who are you using it on? And there were a lot of candidates.
Yeah, this was the argument. It's funny because I was listening to Simmons and Zach Lowe today, and they had like a 20-minute conversation about amnesty clauses, and I was like, man, would the NHL ever do that?
Well, they did.
I just can't see them doing it again.
It would have to be, well, I would say it would take something drastic, and if a pandemic that, you know, killed their hockey related revenue didn't do it, it's going to be tough to see them doing it again.
Fair. I don't know the answer, by the way. It's probably Trouba, but it's funny you mentioned this because I was thinking about this question today. Let's say that the Rangers do buy out Trouba. They're not going to. Just want to make that super clear. But let's live in a theoretical world. They buy out Trouba. Who are you playing in the right-hand defenseman? Like, it's... Nils is gone, and I don't think the Rangers really love Nils in general, mostly because I think Nils, his value really came from running power play one, of which he's not really doing in Dallas either. And it's not like he's ripping it up over there. And well, let's admit it to ourselves. Playoff hockey is way different than regular season hockey. And Jacob Trouba, whether we like it or not, is way better in the playoffs than in the regular season because he's more well-suited for that kind of game. So while he will never, ever, ever, ever live up to $8 million contract, I just don't know who... It's really hard to find quality right-handed defensemen, and that's why when they were able to trade for Jacob Trouba and sign him to that contract, they were like, all right, here's a guy who put up points in Winnipeg, who is defensively like a stalwart, and he's going to be a leader of our team for years to come. He wants to be here, and it just didn't work out that way. Adam Fox became who he is, and literally the best defenseman in the NHL, and Jacob Trouba is now sitting here with the C on his chest, probably not worth more than $4 million a year in terms of his
value. Yeah, I mean, you can make an argument that it could be a little bit more than that. But whenever you look at Trouba's struggles, you also have to remember he's not being relied on, you know, to go up against the top line of other teams anymore. Like, I think I'm sending out Fox and Lindgren when it's crunch time and I see the other.
Oh yes, you absolutely are. Actually, sometimes you're sending out Fox and Miller. Well,
when you got Jacob Trouba, you're like, oh, this guy could bring some offense. He was for the most of the time as Winnipeg, he was playing on that second pairing with Morrissey, I think. And you saw a guy who had the ability to take that next step up and be on your first pairing. And unfortunately, it just hasn't shaken out that way. If anything, he's a step behind what, you know, people thought he was in Winnipeg, which was that extremely solid second pairing guy.
Which is why this is like comes back to the amnesty question. Like, I think it's between him and Barclay Goodrow, who I think will, be bought out or possibly traded this offseason anyway, and Trocheck. Mm-hmm. Because the point I wanted to get to at the beginning of this is I don't think the Trocheck-Panarin thing is really working. Trocheck, his skill set is two-way forward. Pest can – I mean, he's hit every single post on the side of the in the NHL this year. He can't buy a goal similar to Lafreniere, but he at least has created offense, hasn't been able to finish it. But his offense is never like his number one thing. It was that he's a two-way center that can, you know, drive play, not in a major way, but they just haven't met. He hasn't meshed with Panarin at all, which is why it's so funny and weird to me that we haven't moved Hedel up, because Hedel has become and is becoming very quickly one of the best forwards on this team. I think he's fifth in points. He's getting less ice time than other players and is producing at a higher level. He's become a point per game player the last seven games. That's a 7-7, if you were wondering how that works. That's math, baby. And then to not have him play up with Panarin, like, I saw a lot of people like, hey, Kravtsov's holding Panarin down. Like, I don't think it's Kravtsov that's doing that. And tonight they moved VC up there and top six Goodrow, of course. And Goodrow, he does all the right things, Sam. He just gets out there and plays tough hockey. Look at this secondary assist. Let's talk about this for 9 minutes. And I like Goodrow a lot, but he's not a top six guy. He can be up there. He can do those things. And Trocheck just hasn't meshed with Panarin at the level I was ever really expecting. And I know, and Greg's not here to call me a shithead, so I can say this. I know that Ryan Strome was not the answer for the New York Rangers, but he was absolutely the answer for Tommy Panarin, and he has not been the same player.
Yeah, which is another reason why it was a gamble to move on from Strome and bring in Trocheck. you know, especially I think Strome signed for a 5-year deal in Dallas.
Similar AAV, yes.
But it was, in Anaheim, you know, when you looked at the available options, it was you had Strome, who you know has the chemistry with Panarin, who you know, played that bumper role in the power play. You had Kopp, who fit in on the team great. Yes, he was playing mostly wing, but played center at times when the lineup needed just for him to slide over. And instead, you were like, "Well, let's roll the dice." And it's risky to do when you already have such a a solid core in place. And sometimes it comes out snake eyes. And I'm not saying that Trocheck is awful, the worst player in the league, but conversation, we've questioned why Hedl isn't in for Trocheck on both the second line with Panarin and the power play. And to be honest, Trocheck's kind of what you think of in a third line setter, right? Some guy, a guy who can provide some offense, but is going to be defensively responsible. He wins his faceoffs.
That's why he's on the power play, to win the faceoff.
There's two reasons why I think it's one, that he's going to win the faceoffs, which is also sometimes why he starts out in overtimes. And two, which I hope isn't the case, he talked about playing on that power play one before he, even put on a jersey for a press conference, which means assurances were made to him that he was going to get that spot. And I hope that's not the reason he is still playing with Panarin and he's still on power play one, because that's got to be thrown out the door. You already gave the man a great contract for him. So push that aside. Now you just have to do what's best for your team, which is often a foreign concept for Mr. Gallant. But I think it's time to, see Hedl in those spots.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. And I want to make sure this is super clear. Like, I'm not a Trocheck hater, but it's just worth talking about these kind of things. Where, and again, hashtag respect the charts. It's mostly red bar bad. Like, that's for Trocheck. It was when I saw the charts, I was like kind of shocked. I was like, has Trocheck been this bad this season? I don't think he's been this bad. He's been solid. He's been a good player. Watched him play. He's brought a lot to this team. And I think he's like a good locker room guy and all that. And of course, I'm glad he got that. But he definitely, like you said, he definitely got assurances before he got here. Like, even in his opening press conference, he was like, yeah, they told me I'd play with Panarin. That's awesome. Could have played in the power play one. We were all like,
yep,
what?
Yep.
Wait, hold on. You have the first and second overall pick. Like, let's do that. And then, not that Lafreniere has had any great shakes to take that.
No.
Any other burning topic you want to talk to before we talk about?
Yeah, so just since the last time you did a full show, it was, we got 6 out of 8 points, right? We beat Minnesota, Dallas, and Columbus. We lost to Montreal, which, as we discussed, is a game. You shake it off. You take
happens.
6 out of 8. Pretty much every time. It's hard to ask for more than that. The next stretch, home for Boston, home for Florida, at Toronto, home for Vegas. Oof. Oof.
Oof. Oof. Oof. Chris has got to come back for that. I think
it's,
he knows.
You got 2 days off before Boston.
Looking at the standings right now, unfortunately, the Devils won today.
Yeah, they had a little miracle of their own. They were down by a goal to the Sharks and scored with about 8 seconds left, I think, and then won it in a shootout.
But the Capitals also came back down 3-0 to beat the Islanders, which is awesome. Yes. And so the Islanders are starting to fall down a little bit. They are 4-2-2 in their last 10. The Penguins are 3-6-1, by the way, and haven't been able to put it together just yet. So the Rangers have 57 points. They're 7 points up on both those teams, and they do have a game in hand they played one more game than the Hurricanes and the Devils, who both have 62 and 61 respectively of this recording. The Metro is hell, but the Rangers are starting to solidify themselves as one of those top 4 teams. I'm not really too worried about it just yet. I think your question is, how many points do we get in these next 4?
I mean, so first, I'm just looking at the box scores from tonight. The Penguins were losing to the Ducks and tied it with 25 seconds left, and then won in overtime.
I hate
and
the Metro,
then,
dude.
Of course, the Capitals did beat the Islanders, but it was an OT, so everyone gets a point there. Not a great night for out-of-town scoreboard watching.
No, I hate it. And I would say the Rangers get 5 points in the next 4 games here. I could see them taking it overtime. The Bruins game is going to be a bloodbath. The Bruins are so good right now. They're 7-1-2 in their last 10. The team is a wagon. For some reason, the Rangers always play really well versus the Maple Leafs. Like, I don't know why that is.
I would never have thought this going into the season, but it's crazy to circle the Florida game as like that's your must-win one because you're really going to need those 2 points.
Oh yeah, that's you have to have those 2 points. And then I think they'll take care of business too on Pride Night versus the Eichel and the Vegas Golden Knights.
Hope so.
And I know the Knights are good, but they just got dominated tonight.
Yeah. Well, I think I would take 5. I mean,
I'm happy with 4. I'm happy to split the next 4. Cool with it. Totally.
Yeah,
fine.
This is one of those stretches where, you know, keep your head above water.
That's it. Let's get some 5-star questions. If you want to leave a 5-star question on the show, you can go to Patreon. Our Discord is open. You can leave a 5-star question there. And we read them on the show every single week. Okay, this is from EP episode 29, or is it EP? I don't know. His name is Keandreary. That's funny. That's cute. What would you pay Keandre, and do you think it's the right... do it right now or over the summer? You cannot do it right now because you have no cap space, and the cap space you do have, you need to use at the trade deadline. So they will pay him over the summer. For what I would pay Keandre,
well,
is
Ryan,
a way different
question. Let me interrupt you. Whether you lock him up now, that's not going to change his salary for this year. So you're not affecting this year's cap, no matter when if you sign him now or in the summer.
Keandre Miller is going to play his full season before he accepts anything because he knows how good he is, and he has come out personally and said, I'm getting that back.
If you're the Rangers, like, has his stock ever been higher? This right now, precisely in this moment, might not be the best time to sign him after his last couple games.
Can we do the trade value game? This is great. I love doing this. Trade value. Who has a higher trade value, Kako or Keandre?
I think it's got to be Keandre.
I think so too. Kako or Hedl?
It's tough. I think it's still Keandre though.
Keandre.
Oh, that's unfortunately that's an easy one. It's Keandre by a mile.
Yeah, I know, but it's like that. I think he's the most important kid, and I think they know they have to lock him up and find a way to do it, whether that's getting rid of somebody else on the team. You cannot, Keandre, like, without looking, do you know how old Keandre is? It's ridiculous. Oh, he's 22. it's disgusting.
And here's the thing. You cannot let having a Gaudreau contract or even a Trocheck contract, keep you from signing Keandre Miller. You can't let yourself. The team I always look at as a victim of their own success was the Blackhawks, who had to hemorrhage players after they won a couple. But we haven't won anything, and we're already talking about like, well, we're not going to be able to keep all our good players. It's like, well, stop signing the mediocre ones.
I know. It's like Goodrow's replaceable. Yeah. He does a lot of great things, and he's a very, very good versatile player. But Jimmy Vesey's right there. He signed for 3 years.
Yeah, and a variable 800K. So even if he starts to slip, you could just bury that. Did he get any no move or clauses in that?
No.
So yeah. No. Oh, what a beautiful.
But they'll be loyal to him. You know how the Rangers are. It's one of my favorite signings of the Drury era. To answer the question though, what would I pay Keandre is way different than what Keandre would accept, because I think the play right now is kind of the Matthew Boldy contract, but maybe a little lower he'd go for, which is like do you think Keandre would accept like a 5.5 or a 6x7? Like if I was his agent, I'd be like, absolutely not. My dude and my guy's a top left, like prime defenseman. He's not like, I wouldn't sign long-term because I think I can get an 8-year back.
Well, if his agent
like
came to
years.
You and said, it's 7 times 7 or give us a bridge deal, we're not going lower than 7 times 7, I think I'm giving him the 7x7.
I don't know how we do it, but I think you have to find a way.
Because the alternative,
you have to hold Keandre. You have to hold Keandre until he's 30 years old.
The alternative is, you have a couple RFA years to play with, but once he's eligible for arbitration, they're going to be relatively high arbitration awards, and then it's going to be the cap will have gone up, so even if you give him the same percentage deal, it's going to be way higher. So I think, I think now is the time before you get the cap jump and We've heard projections where it'll go up a little next year, and then the following year it'll really bump up. You want to get everyone, you know, all your young talent locked up for as long as possible before that big bump.
This is from Exo. From what you've seen so far, do you prefer Panarin playing with Hedl or Trocheck? Who is your preferred right wing option with either C choice? We kind of talked about this a little bit. I'm going to make just one more point. I really think Kravtsov and, like, Artemi Panarin wants to play with Kravtsov, and that couldn't be more clear. And I think he sees that he can get that kid going. Now, that what Artemi Panarin thinks and what actually is true is totally different, because the players that Panarin has succeeded with have not been those kind of players. They've been Colin Blackwell. They've been Jesper Fast. They've actually been Barclay Goodrow. I cannot believe I'm saying this, but that's where Panarin's been the best. So that's why I think if you're going to have, he needs to have a playmaking center and a dirty work right wing, which is why it's kind of fine to have Goodrow play up there once in a while. But I think he's going to try and transform. Like, that second line should be Panarin, Hedl, Kravtsov, and Kravtsov's playing like the, he needs to be a little bit more physical. And I think Panarin's trying to shape him into the skilled version of Jesper.
Yeah,
Fast.
I think, you know, it's definitely possible that Panarin knows he needs that playmaker and that grinder to play with. And he sees Trocheck as that grinder. So he's saying, you're giving me someone with skill. You're not giving me a Goodrow. You're giving me a Kravtsov that has the, you know, more offensive upside. You know, as we said earlier, we would love to see Hedl playing with Panarin. As far as who's going to be on that right wing, could it be Kravtsov? Sure, but that, you know, that line then leaves a little bit to be desired defensively. And then kind of leaves you with a third line of, I guess, Trocheck, Laf, and Jimmy Vesey or Goodrow.
Sure. Yeah, Goodrow's fine there too. It's fine. It's totally fine. David asks, 79 and 23 forever. It'll be forever when we need a goal in the last 3 minutes. But otherwise, like, Lindgren's been a solidified top pairing defenseman.
Yeah, Lindgren's name is going to come up again when we eventually have to face pay the piper. There's going to be casualties. And it's hard for me to want to let him go in any type of situation, because Fox is so good and Lindgren has been his best partner, right? It's just, you know, someone that they get stapled together and they both had success. And sure, Adam Fox.
Chemistry matters. It's like when your podcast host doesn't show up. Like, you have to find a way to score in the last 4 minutes, which is why I called you.
Oh, poor Greg.
Greg did tell me he wasn't coming. I want to make sure I'm not starting any rumors. Like, this was planned. All right, that was funny. This is from Izbox. Does Panarin's Selly kick for Fox's OT goal properly quantify the excitement that is building around this team, challenges aside? This team's awesome. It's just, this team knows it's awesome, just that, and that's what makes it not awesome sometimes, if that makes sense. It knows how good it is, and it just wants to get to the playoffs healthy, and it's trying to do that. But when this team fights back, they're the perfect playoff team. They don't win by a lot. They don't blow teams out, but they find and grind ways to win games. And that's what you need in the playoffs, and that's what this team has done. Not everybody can be the Avalanche and just have a million utility guys and Nathan MacKinnon and Cal Makar, full skill everywhere. And that's, I even didn't even mention like five other amazing skill players. But the Rangers are our grind team.
Said this at the end of the playoffs last year. We're like, man, we just want another crack at this. It's almost sucks that we have to go through a full regular season before we get back there. And you know, as of late, you know, as people like to say, ever since the helmet throw, our record looks pretty good. But
team's good,
you know,
man.
But like, looking at, you know, where we are in the standings, you know, nothing's guaranteed. It's going to be a fight because, you know, the Devils obviously came out with such a hot start. They banked so many points. I think you and Greg greatly exaggerated the Hurricanes' demise before the season. Obviously, I think they're going to be at the
I just thought it was over.
Yeah. you know, they added Burns,
I was wrong.
And Pacioretty, who obviously got had the injury and you know, before the season even started, but they got him for free, so I know.
I was scared of the Devils this year, yeah. And I was right about
the Devils.
That,
look, but... they're getting competent goaltending, and look what they could do. But it's going to be. I think it's going to be a dogfight. Just finishing the regular season, and to me, it's not going to matter much where we get seated, as long as we're not having to go to Boston, for a first round. I will take 1-3 in the Metro and know that I have to play some combination of the, Devils, Hurricanes, Penguins, Caps.
I'm cool with all those matchups. I just though. Like super.
You just don't want to be in a scenario where, like, if you get past Boston in the first, your reward is like the Maple Leafs team ready to break the curse, or the Lightning again.
I also don't want to be the team that the Maple Leafs break the curse against. Like, that's something I don't know if I'd rather lose the Devils or the Maple Leafs break the curse against me. Like, that's hard. We have a couple more here, so we got to keep going. This is from Seamus. Oh, what's wrong with me? Seamus is Duclair the forward they should target. Returning from an injury in Florida has either move him or money for money. Either have to pay him or move him for money. He makes $3 million a year this year and next year. Shoots well, skates fast, like a juiced up Vetrano. I think if he was just for this year, they would go for him, but because he has 2 years, they won't do it.
Unless, I mean, that simple. Can I interest you in a Barclay Gaudreau?
We just talked about how you might have to pay Keandre Miller $7 million. Like,
yeah, Duclair, he was part of the Yandel trade, right? He had flashes here, and... he had some ups and downs, but became a pretty reliable goal scorer, very much like a Vetrano. And it seems like someone you kind of need on this team. As much as, again, you and Greg going into the season, we're like, this team is better than it was than last season. And I agreed when I looked at the start of last season's roster, but not the playoff roster, because they had just brought in the perfect reinforcements. And Drury has a tall task to do that again, especially because he's hopefully going to have, once he got rid of Reeves, he's going to have a little bit of cap space to play with after all the accumulation. But like you said, can you take on a single penny for after this year with all the people you're going to have to pay?
No, dude, absolutely not. Can't do it. This is from Jay White, 18011. This is a Vladimir Putin question. So
we'll just skip
here.
It.
Not to get political, but as a teacher of current events and a lecturer on conflict, do you believe the NHL reporters have done enough to ask Ovechkin about his connections to Vladimir Putin? I think they have, but you can only do it so often. Like, how often do you want them to ask? Like, they kind of know which side he lands on. I think everybody kind of knows which side he lands on at this point.
Yeah, it's
like, this isn't my expertise.
It's one of those things where I think enough has been done where, like, everyone kind of knows where the chips lie. When it's the same as when they were asking the NFL players if they were vaccinated, and the response was like, oh, well, it's a HIPAA issue, which I don't have the time to explain why that's such a dumb answer. But that was basically a no, right? And the same thing here. Everyone knows how Ovechkin feels about Putin. The last thing the NHL wants is that to be at the forefront, because every time Ovechkin scores a goal, you see, his big goal counter, chasing Gretzky, going up. And the last thing the NHL wants is, Canadian hero Wayne Gretzky, whose face is going to be printed on their money at some point, that, getting passed by pro-Russia, pro-Putin Ovechkin. That's just not the narrative you want. You want it to be a celebration.
I will say that Larry Brooks calls this out all the time, and good for Larry. He's like one of the only reporters.
Look, there's a difference between writing about it and putting Ovechkin on the spot, but at some point there's little left to be gained by straining a relationship. If you're a Capitals beat reporter, you're really going to go after the most marketable person, the person everyone.
Yeah. It's like very, you have to look at it as like, how do you lose your job very quickly if you're a beat reporter? And then on top of that, and like, I'm not trying to protect Ovi here. He's totally fine. But let's say he didn't all of a sudden he was like, you know what? I actually hate Vladimir Putin. And he came out and he was like, you know what? Screw you, Vladimir Putin. I hate your ass. Go USA. It's the best here. I live here. I love it. That would probably put his family in a pretty interesting predicament over back in Russia. Like, and we've kind of seen how that works. So it's way more difficult than just saying, hey, can you ask him about Putin every single time?
And this might be stretching it a bit, but like, honestly, with the slight possibility of it happening, do you want to be the beat reporter that pisses off Vladimir Putin with your constant questioning and, you know, risk some kind of, you know, whatever from even here in the U.S.?
So many layers to this. It's ridiculous. But let's all remind everybody that Artemi Panarin has a Nokia phone. And there is a reason for
that.
And
it's not because...
Big time.
You know, he doesn't love playing Snake. That's not the reason.
No, the guy used to literally respond to DMs on Twitter. Like, he responded to me multiple times. He did not need to do that. This is from Gray Red. Asking for Chris Drury, how many fourth-line centers do we need to win the Stanley Cup?
All of them.
Great question. Yeah. The Lechishin one is ridiculous. I don't get it. We'll get into that in the future. Okay. I don't want to spend any more time on it. It's just like, I don't know why he's
very
playing. He's fine, whatever. Didn't see the value in that one, but I don't want to question Chris Drury just yet on that one because I think maybe he's like, hey, we can fix him. I could fix her. This Chris Drury. This is for Brettley. Has the league really decided to turn Trouba into defenseman Tom Wilson? This is I don't know if you saw this, but during the Montreal game, he pretty much kidney shots a Montreal player. It's pretty not defensible for Jacob Trouba. And I wouldn't say he's at Tom Wilson level yet, but I would say he's at the same level of if he has any sort of hit, the GIF will go viral very quickly.
Yeah, and look, it's because you've enraged fan bases for, you know, most notably Pittsburgh, right? Because you took the golden boy down in, you know, an unintentional yet, you know, unfortunate hit, let's put it that way, as the nicest way possible. And once these things start happening more and more, it's hard to say it's a coincidence. When anything happens to your guy, you're gonna assign intention to the player that did it. Montreal fans still hate Chris Kreider and always will. Yeah,
he was tripped, so. He was stripped. This is from Toaster Daddy. I'm very pro retire the Potvin chant sucks chant. As someone who lives in a house with Isles fans, it generally makes us look more sad than any history it holds. They literally sell Potvin socks now at UBS. I mean, come on. That being said, if you were to replace it, what would you replace it with? Do we just replace the name with our current pariah? Is something with the kids? A Jacob Trouba choo-choo chant? Something you know, we've gone to a lot of games here, Dan. The Potvin Chucks chant just doesn't do it for me. I never join in on it. I don't really get it. I think a lot of the fan base, the modern day fan base, doesn't really understand even the history. Potvin was generally very good. It is just something that's not for me. That being said, I don't really know if there's like a good replacement. There's a lot of fun stuff you can do. I think you can look to soccer culture and do a lot of fun songs and singing. That's just not American hockey culture at all. And I'm not sure we'll replace it. It'll be around for a while. I think it'll be around the next 30
years.
I'm
very pro chants that are distinctly from, you know, a given team. So when you hear the whistle, you know, even if you're not at Madison Square Garden, you know what it's about. You know that the Poppin' Sucks chant is coming. But the actual, you know, like you said, who even remembers Poppin'? Like, I'm not sure. I understand the reference. I'm not sure if I've ever gone back and watched the play that has led to it. I would love to replace it with something pro Rangers or at worst, like at least something that's anti arrival, like make it a general Islanders thing.
I would just like to scream, forget about it.
And that's why Ryan's not in charge of chance.
Forget about it. This is for a match, actually. Final question. There was a moment in this game versus CBJ where Johnny Brozinski, Sammy Blais, and Jake Lecision were all on the ice at the same time. Totally unrelated. Do you think the Rangers will be active at the deadline?
You know, look, they have two forwards out, right? It's those guys are, those guys are on
Julian Gauthier
on the ice. Those guys aren't even dressed at the same time when we're healthy. That said, how often do you get through a long playoff stretch with no players having to take a game off?
I will say that Johnny Brzezinski probably ends up starting.
That's not wild at all. I think at this point, I would be surprised if he doesn't.
He's fine. Sammy Blais, the players you mentioned there were Sammy Blais, Ben Harper, and Jake LeCision, and those three players will not see the ice in the playoffs. I think the Rangers will go out and get a depth forward, maybe a right wing, and I also think they'll get a left wing defenseman, left-handed defenseman.
It's one of those things where you saw Justin Braun sign with Philly again for a very small contract, and you're like, would it really have been bad to bring him back? Maybe they just had more faith in Jones than they turned out to now. But
I've said this a lot, but I think Drury kind of mandated Gallant to have certain mm-hmm. players on the roster, and I think Jones was one of those. And then
it's one of those. Do you let the cook buy the ingredients things? Because Drury can do exactly everything we want him to do and make the optimal roster. But if Gallant's not going to play it, what good is that optimal roster? It might have to be more. You make the optimal roster for what you know your coach is going to do, which is not the same thing.
Totally different. Dan, cannot thank you enough for filling in for Greg this week. You may fill in one more week after this. I'm sorry, everyone, that you didn't have to listen to Greg talk about the Mets this week. He will return shortly.
No one can replace Greg. I'm just keeping the seat warm.
That's it, baby. You get it. All right. We love you guys. We'll talk to you next week. You can follow me on Twitter at OrionMead. You can follow Dan Nowhere. And we'll see you guys for BSBOT. I'm going to have my friend Matthew Kine join me. See you guys then. Love you guys. Bye. All right. It's the end of the show. And I want to thank Dan right off the rip before I start thanking NHL Insiders Club's Patreon members for taking time out of his week to come talk New York Rangers hockey with me, with Greg on a very, very extremely temporary hiatus. Honestly, love the guy. Been talking to him for years. Met him. He's one of the people that hosts the Reddit Rangers meetup. He's been great for the community, and it's always awesome talking Rangers hockey with him. So thank you to Dan. And without further ado, let's thank some of the NHL Insiders Club members who make this show possible every single week. And I continue to butcher their names. Adam Cassidy, Adam Cohen, Adam Cotrullo, Adam Linder, Adam Keach. Whoa, that's the worst I've ever said it. Adam Keach, Alex Flynn, Alex Gardner, Andrew Rauner, Anthony Terragata, Ben Waters, Ben Weber, Bill Rattel, Brandon Lackos, Brandon Magnum, Brett Granger, Brett McGinnis, Brian Doyle, Brian Gallagher, Brian Mallon, Chris Finelli, Chris Howard, C.J. Stellwagen, Connery P. Demage, Daniel Dezan, David Siegel, Dennis Deitz, Darian, Eric Stagg, Garrett Reynes, Give Gardner a Cup, Garrett Gretzky Fly, Harrison Haskell, Hip Hippity 9, Ian Rodriguez, Ian Usher, James Masker, Jerry Marquez, J.D., John Jacques, Francois, John Jean, Jamie Mack, John Hardesty, John Shea, Johnny Thundercock, Jordan, Josh Kestenbaum, Christian Florida, Christoph Berg, Kyle Franklin, Lazek Gronowski, Leszek Gronowski, nailed it, Libers Kayak, Lo Giordano, Matthew Goodwin, Matthew Kine, Meatball the Cat. Matthew Kine, by the way, will be joining me exclusively for BSBOT on Thursday. Should be a fun time. Meatball the Cat, Mike Bucklaw, Nate Hanafy, nailed it, Nate. Thank you so much, by the way. Neil Grover, Nicholas DiNicola, Pascal Perrier, Paul J. Smith, Pavel Kodarev, PJ Cisparo, Pro World Text Gamer, Randy Tester, Ryan still hasn't watched Miracle, somehow still true, Stable Box, Weingart, Thomas Walsh, Tommy Sinclair, Tom Rich Jr., Tommy O'Neill, Torfman, Upstate Bin, Vinny Hay, Will Spector, and Winston, the Golden Retriever. Thank you all so much, as always. Greg will be back, and we will talk to you then. BSBOT later this week, me and Manny Jack, me next week with Fitz, Dan possibly again as well, and then maybe mystery guest for next week's BSBOT. Maybe we'll do a voicemail episode. That would kind of be fun. Let's figure out how to do that. We'll do a voicemail BSBOT. Boy, that'll be a disaster, but let's get it done. It'll be fun. I'll have fun editing it. All right, I love you guys. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.